This is Game On. With your host, Seat Williams.
Game On!
Back on the streets of Vegas, feeling good. 3 o'clock standing. NBC Sports 920 The Game. Glad you could join us, pleading to get to today. Following this segment, Lighters Up, Dope. A lot of good stuff lined up there. Myself and Ari, he's got the wheels of steel. And, of course, that final go-around, we'll take a look at the pennant races. Kind of interesting. Couple of teams just, how about the Cleveland Indians and the D-backs going off the charts? Right now in studio, he joins us each and every Thursday at this time. We've moved over here, so he's here with us. WagerTalk.com, a good friend of mine from many years back, Scott Spritzer. What's up, dog?
I'm doing good, man. I can't wait. NFL Week 1, I'm so pumped. Super contest in it again. $1 million or more than that, actually. Uh-huh. Two first place, and I got a couple of nice partners that I'm teamed up with this year, so I'm pumped and ready to go, man.
So we'll get to that. Okay, wait. So I had Jay Cornegay on Monday, and he was telling me he's going to make somebody a millionaire this year.
First place is going to draw over $1 million. And so it's a situation where they got well over 2,000 entries, I guess. And can you remember, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, like in the last 10 years, where the total number of entries was like 250, 350 people. And now you're talking over 2,000. And here's how tough it is. Al McBoardy and I partnered up a couple of years ago, and we hit 65% against the spread in the contest. And we finished 16th. With a 65% record, we took home 21,000 from the Westgate. We were about two or three wins away from about a $90,000 or $80,000 payoff. And we were just all over the board the last 3 weeks. We were anywhere from like sixth to out of the money. And that was back when they paid the top 30. Now they pay the top 50. So in the last 3 or 4 weeks, we were anywhere from like sixth of the standings to outside the top 30. We finished 16th, hitting 65%. Good friend of mine hit 62%, out of the money.
Oh.
So and that's the year, what were they called, the ballers or something like that, won, and they hit about 74, 75% of their plays. And that's the thing. It's like, man, it's so tough to hit 57, 58%. You got to hit 65% and hope that there's not 15, 16 guys that just have ridiculous, or girls that have ridiculous breakout seasons. So you need a lot of luck on your side, obviously.
Remember them girls that would... I can't remember what contest they were. Was it Last Man Standing, whatever it was, and they let it roll over every week?
Yeah, I can't remember what they called themselves, and they let it roll over every week, and they built it up to like close to $1 million, if I remember right. Don't know whatever happened to them. That's been, what, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, probably.
I think because they let it roll over too long.
Probably. They were enjoying the publicity they were getting and the radio shows they were getting, and they probably lost it. But, boy, I think they were... If memory serves correctly, they were doing that at the Westgate, if I remember.
Yeah, and so the
Jay
thing
might
is,
remember that.
It was before all of the social media hype. So if you had them now, would be celebrities. They'd probably have their own reality show.
They'd be doing videos. They'd be on ESPN.
Uh-huh.
Whatever.
Reality.
Yep.
Absolutely. Plenty to get to. Obviously, we don't know the whole story of what took place here after the fight over at Dre's. I don't know. Wrong place, wrong time. Your reaction when the police see you. We don't have the whole story,
right.
Okay, because we're getting two sides of it. I've been arrested years ago. I got arrested here years ago, even yourself.
Yeah, I've been in cuffs twice.
Bad boy, huh? Bad boy from Omaha.
It was wrong place, wrong time. Listen, in the late 80s, I was like 19 years old or whatever, and me and a bunch of guys are in North Las Vegas at a Skaggs or Osco or whatever they called it back then in a parking lot. One of the guys worked there. We picked him up. There was a place, you're going to laugh at the name. I don't know if you remember it. There was a club in Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and they didn't mean it the way it sounds. There were a lot of people from all races that hung there, but it was called Crackers.
I remember Crackers.
And I actually DJed for about an hour or two at Crackers. Upstairs, the DJ booth. Uh-huh. Okay, so anyway, we get done there. We've had our share of drinks or whatever, and there's this... I think it was on Lake Mead, but there was this Osco Drugs or whatever. And we're out in the parking lot, and we're playing catch. We're playing football out in the parking lot, like six of us, 3-on-3 at like 1 o'clock in the morning, pretty well fueled at the time. And the cops came over. They lined us up, put us in cuffs. That wasn't bad. They were pretty cool. They realized what was going on. They detained us for a couple of minutes, and they said, all right, guys, why don't you get out of here? You know, you don't want to be here right now, and people are complaining.
Did they say,
noise.
Leave you crackers?
Yeah. That place was around forever, by the way. And then, let's see, the last time was in the late 90s. It was wrong place, wrong time. And I mean that. I didn't go to jail, nothing like that. I was detained for about 30 minutes, wrong place, wrong time. When I got cuffed, before I could even say a word, my legs were kind of kicked out to where I was leaned up against a stucco wall with all my weight because I had cuffs on my arms behind my back.
So they kicked your legs up from the front to the back.
To spread them out, you know, like you should.
Okay.
But my head is rested up against a stucco wall. And I mean, that stucco's just grinded in there because that's the only thing I can use to keep. That's all my weight, you know, is on my head. And so anyway, they finally get me off of there. They let me off of there. They sit me down, asking me a bunch of questions. And obviously, I'm not going anywhere at this point. I'm sitting down. There's a couple of police officers, and I think 98% of them do a great job. But one of them happens to say to me, he starts saying things to me, and I said, listen, I go, obviously, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not fighting you. And I go, can we loosen these up? They got tightened, the cuffs. I said, can they loosen them up? Because my hands are going numb here. Uh-oh. So they tightened the cuffs. Now, at that point, and I'm like, at the time, I think I was like 28 or 29.
You're a troublemaker, yeah.
You know, I heard that before. Guy. Somebody else has said something like that to me before, that I used to be a troublemaker. I wanted to say something. I really did. And something that was said to me I thought was uncalled for. And it took everything in me, see, to just hold it in. And, you know, I'm a white guy, right? But I'm sitting there and I'm holding it in. And so I'm like not even saying that I'm being racially profiled if that goes on. I'm just sitting there going, okay, shut your mouth, shut your mouth. My brother Mark, who you met before, happened to be there. And he's looking at me and he's going like, just don't say anything, man. And he knows me and he can see me. I mean, I'm puffed up. I'm ready, you know. And anyway, so when they tightened them, they said something to me. I was this close to saying something back. Thank God my brother was there because I looked at him and I could see in his face, he's like, man, I hate seeing my little bro in cuffs. And I could see that, and I could see him like going like, don't say a word, you know. And I just shut my mouth. And it all worked out. At the end, 30 minutes later, I had been detained. I wasn't arrested, wrong place, wrong time, the whole shebang, and everything was fine. But it wasn't a pleasant experience. Now, again, my oldest brother actually worked at the office for the State Patrol for a long time after he got out of the Navy. I know 97, 98% of cops out there do the right thing at all times, but we're all human. Some of us don't do the right thing at all times. Some of us do. This Michael Bennett situation, I don't know. Do we know yet? I mean, there's one video that where he's like, I guess, running out of the casino. He had been hiding behind the slot machine. But we don't know if that's because he was looking to avoid police or if he heard gunshots and thought his life was in danger. But if you're going to run out and police are there and there's all those cars, I don't know if you saw the traffic that night after the fight. I mean, that's bumper to bumper, as bad as it's ever been in Las Vegas on the Strip. If you're going to run out towards traffic and there's a thought that there's a shooter in the casino, and you see somebody running out, one person running out of the front door is going into traffic, don't you got to do everything you got to do to tackle the guy and make sure that he ain't the shooter? Now, I don't know if Michael Bennett was at fault. I don't know if the police were at fault. Michael Bennett says they were. There's also a rumor or a word that went out there, what, earlier in this whole thing, where they said that he told the cops, I don't blame you for what you did. Like, almost like he thought what they did was right. So, no idea. And it's all so many rumors going on. They say they have over 100 different video angles.
24.
We're going to find out who was right and who was wrong. Unfortunately, I don't think there's any audio, if I remember correctly from what I heard.
As far as, they had him on the ground, and you could hear.
Oh, there was one guy with a gun to his head, which seemed awfully excessive.
Yeah, you hear the trade between them.
Oh, could you? Okay.
Yeah, he was like, well, what did I do? I didn't do anything. You got the wrong guy. And so they're going back and forth, and the cop, you can hear what the cop said. The cop said, What did he say? If you move,
I'll blow your
frog in the brains out.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. I mean, see, and the cops, I don't know if they're taught that in training, but they do want to intimidate you. I don't know if it's to see what kind of reaction you're going to get or to let you know who's in charge.
Sure.
It could be either or. However, that you hear quite a bit. You've heard it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's hard. I don't know what they're supposed to do, what the training is. I've never trained to be a cop, but if somebody's running out of a casino and it's the one person running in towards traffic, let's imagine for a second that it was somebody else, not Michael Bennett, and it was a shooter, and he runs into a million cars that are sitting still on the Strip, how that could turn ugly in a heartbeat. So the adrenaline's going 9,000 miles an hour for the cop also trying to make that stop. Now, I don't know if you're in cuffs already, and I haven't really studied the video or anything like that, but just trying to think and recall what I saw. If he's in cuffs with cuffs in his, I mean, in his hands
and,
behind
and
his back.
And the knees in his back.
Was the gun pointed at his head before or after?
The gun was pointed at his head as.
After the cuffs were on?
That part I don't recall.
I was going to say, that makes a big difference to me.
You could tell that. See, they had a flashlight on him, so the gun is on his head. You could see the gun on his head because of the flashlight. So they're going to figure it out.
And I hope the right thing is done. And here's the thing. What do you do? All right, if the cop or cops were at fault, there's got to be at least a suspension. There's got to be a review into what these guys have done in their careers. And there's a suspension, possibly a firing. You know, I'm not saying what they're going to do or know what they're going to do, but that's what you would think as a member of the public. If Michael Bennett actually did say to these police officers, you did the right thing, I don't blame you. If you really did say that at the scene of the crime or whatever, no crime. But I mean, you know what I mean? I was using that as a figure of speech. Got to be careful. If he did that at the scene and said that and had no problem when that whole thing was done and over with and then decided to get dramatic, doesn't he have to face something? Doesn't something have to come out against Michael Bennett?
I think it really kind of, look, you're happy to be leaving. I'm in cuffs. I'm in your car.
You're feeling,
I get out of there.
You're breathing,
thank you.
Like,
bye.
I remember that.
Then
feeling.
You're leaving. You're
you
like,
good.
You SOBs. I mean, you just want to get out of there.
Right.
So I will say this: it is a bad PR thing for the LA, for the Las Vegas PD. It's a bad PR thing because, boom, it's a guy who is respected in the NFL.
Right.
It's a guy who's already a part of a movement. Kaepernick, if it was him, be a different story.
See,
he deserved it.
The thing about Kaepernick, he comes out right away and makes a statement. I'm like, you have no clue. You're in the same boat as I am at what happened. So just wait until the stuff comes out. You know, here's what I'll say about Michael Bennett. Very smart guy. He's supposed to be a very intelligent guy. I've never met him, but I heard he's super intelligent long before this ever happened.
Uh-huh.
And so he's a smart guy. He's obviously concerned about social issues. Great. I love that when a person, you know, who's recognized all over this country, takes time to not just cash the $1 million checks, but to be socially conscious of what's going on around him and try to help change. But I would ask every football player out there, I don't have a problem with you kneeling. It doesn't bother me before a game at the national anthem. But do you realize that you're putting the majority of the people in those stands are good people? Do you realize that you're putting them in a negative state of mind when you kneel for the national anthem? So when you do make great points with your protest or the reasons for your protest or message, 90% of the people are tuning you out. You're basically, your message has fallen on deaf ears.
Well, let me say this.
Because of the protest. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No,
but I was going to say,
I
understand it. Personally, it doesn't bother me.
Right.
But I want the message to get across.
I get your point.
And there's
going to
be negative thoughts before you could even say that message.
But if you don't kneel for the flag, you ain't getting no attention at all. That's the only way you're going to get the attention.
I get that argument.
The biggest grabber is the fact that...
But it looks like you're trying to divide rather than bring together. And not
it
in
depends
my eyes,
on the perception.
I'm talking about 90% of the people out there.
Right. There's no other way to really get the message across without putting a pause on people.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest pause you can have is for the national anthem.
See, and there's one thing, and I stand at the national anthem heart on hand. Okay,
I've seen you at a game.
Well, you saw me in the 1990s. But anyway, but what I'm saying is I stand for the national anthem. But it's funny that before the Colin, it was like a couple of months before football season, the football season that Kaepernick decided to sit for the national anthem. And my brother and I were at a baseball game, and we're standing there, and I kind of whispered to him during the national anthem, and I go, I wonder what would happen if I sat down right now with all these people around me and just, like, looked down at my shoes or looked up at the sky and sat there. And I go, I'd probably everybody be yelling at me to stand up, or if I put my hat on, take it off. And I go, and by the way, to anybody listening, I'm all about patriotism, but I'm not one of these rah-rah guys. I don't go into other people's countries and I'm American. I'm the best. You know, I have respect for those people. I do think this is the best country on the planet. But you know what? Those guys who fought in wars and continue to fight in wars for our freedom, didn't they fight for our freedom to sit during the national anthem also? Isn't that part of it? So I get it offends a lot of people, but that's part of the freedom, man. And so it doesn't bother me so much when a person kneels for the national anthem. But I will say this, man, I hear people talking. Nobody wants to hear your protest after you just ticked them off because they took it personal that you knelt for the national anthem. And I get that side of it. So, you know, you have a store. You have a big store, and you got people coming into your store, and you've got an employee who's a great employee otherwise, but he stands at the store and tells you how this store doesn't pay people enough money. I hate this store. I hate working here. Blah, 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 blah. Are you going to let an employee do that? It's a business, and the NFL is a business. So if Kaepernick is a starting quarterback skill-wise, he gets picked up. He's a second-string quarterback at best. He's got terrible numbers ever since. Even Champ Bailey said the easiest quarterback to read and cheat on is Colin Kaepernick. Champ Bailey said that a year ago. You know, so it's a situation where he was almost, it looks like, hired by the Baltimore Ravens until his girlfriend said that stuff about Ray Lewis.
Sent the tweet out.
Yeah.
Yeah. One final question before we get to the game tonight. During the national anthem, do you think Dave Koken takes off that Kangol cap?
Absolutely not. Thank God.
You saw that here before, right?
I got to tell you something. Koken's probably like on his way home. We just did the show, got over 15 minutes ago. By now he's at home and probably watching a Red Sox game or whatever, uh-huh. Getting ready for the Patriots. I'll never forget I did a TV show, as you know, in the 90s with Dave for several years. Like
Pro-line.
10 years. Yeah, Pro-line. And the general manager of the TV show and the production at the time, she had this real southern draw, and I can't do southern draws, but she's like, David, take off that hat. I want to see what you look like without the hat.
Oh, no.
He takes it off, and she goes, oh, my God, you look like Snoopy. Put it back on. Sorry, Dave, I love you, and you know it.
And he had it on ever since. He sleeps in it. He showers in it.
Poor guy.
Oh, man, that's our dog, though, Dave Koken. All right, Scott Sprites of WagerTalk.com in the house. Let's jump on it tonight. Kansas City, New England. Scott already took under 48.5. That number is kind of high, I think, on the side. 9. Are you doing anything with this yet?
Yeah, I saw some 8s on it. It's an opinion for me. I didn't get involved in this game. But I did get involved with Kansas City under 9 wins this year. One of my favorite plays is this team to finish under 9 wins on the season. I don't think they'll win tonight. I think New England finds a way to win by 10 to 14 points. The things that I worry about Kansas City is, like, last year, they finished 12-4. Statistically speaking, they were like an 8-8 team, 9-7. I mean, it was all other teams' mistakes, miscues, giveaways, things like that, that led to them being 12-4. They weren't that good. They're not that good this year. They don't have anybody really to help out Tyreek. I mean, who's going to help out Tyreek Hill, right, as far as drawing attention off of him? And they've always had problems at wide receiver, it seems like, since Andy Reid has been there. Tyreek Hill's a burner. But he's going to be looked at. He's going to be doubled. They're going to lean to the defense to his side of the field because there's nobody else to make that defense play honest as far as wideout. Travis Kelce is a great tight end, and he might do some damage because he's going to match up against Patrick Chung. And Patrick Chung's numbers went way down last year as a defender. So they might be able to get Kelce working early. Remember, Reed scripts 15 to 18 plays out of the blocks. They'll run from that script card that he has every week on offense. But I think once we get into the second half, you're going to see New England pull away. Hogan, unbelievable last year. That quick, being able to get on the same page as Brady. He's back. Brandon Cooks is going to go up against Marcus Phillips. That's kind of a wash. You know, Brandon Cooks is going to be a great receiver, I think, for Tom Brady. But a wash in this particular matchup, it'll be pretty even. But I think at the other, like Amendola, listed as the third receiver, the chemistry he has with Brady that we saw in Super Bowl 51, all these things that Kansas City's got to overcome. Houston has to play better on defense. He has to be able to get a pass rush. They got a kid named Chris Jones, young guy. Better rush up the middle. You better fight a pass rush up the middle. You didn't have one last year. You were 28th in the league in sacks. New England was 5th in allowing sacks. I think that ends up catching up with KC in the second half. I didn't bet it, but I think New England wins like 31-17. 30 to, you know, in that neighborhood, about a 10 to 14 point win.
I wonder how much they'll miss Edelman.
I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal because I think it's the program, so to speak, to borrow a college term. It's just that system, man. And it's like every year and Gronk is back, by the way. I didn't even mention that. You know, and he's healthy. He wasn't healthy last year. So every year it seems like early in the season, we hear about a New England star who's lost for the season. Even Brady a few years ago when Castle had to come in and play, and they still won a bunch of regular season games with Matt Castle. So it is organization. It is Belichick's system. I think they overcome it. We didn't see the books adjust the numbers when Edelman went out. So it's a situation where I think they just keep on keeping on.
I agree. I think New England wins the ball game, perhaps double digits. I hope I get the under. We'll see. I bet it cased on, I just don't think Kansas City is going to put them any points on the board.
Yeah, and I can see that. I mean, it wouldn't shock me to see like a 27-10 final. Like I said, I was saying 31-17. But Kansas City, I think, is going to have to work hard to get 17 seat. I think it's going to be one of those situations. They don't have Spencer Ware. Not a huge deal at running back. They got a kid by the name of Kareem Rush, who's a rookie, who's going to get most of the snaps at running back. But they will miss Spencer Ware on third and short. He's a big guy. He can also catch the ball. He's athletic out of the backfield at 235. He's not going to be there. It will hurt a little bit.
Scott Spritzer, WagerTalk.com here on the show. Game on. Miami, Tampa, it's ironic. I mean, they're supposed to be playing in Tampa because of Irene. They won't be able to, and they have the same bye week, so they're going to move it to November 19th. But the other game that catches me, and I'll let you talk about some games in particular you may like, Oakland and Tennessee is kind of an eye catcher.
Yeah, and it moved a lot. I took Tennessee, talked about it on the show quite a bit, but took Tennessee plus a point and a half a couple months ago, and now they're laying up to 2 points, Tennessee.
Nice grab.
And a lot of that has to do with obviously sharp money, public in Vegas, all over the Oakland Raiders. A lot of this has to do with that Oakland defense, which we all kind of felt going into preseason that it was leaky. There's some holes in that Oakland defense. It's going to be tough for this team to win more than 10 games because of that defense. And now you got Khalil Mack, who may not play, their best defender, by far one of the best defenders in all of the league, and he's basically their quarterback on defense on the field. He's listed as questionable. He's banged up. So it's a situation where I think Mariota, his new group of receivers, are going to be able to do enough damage to keep Oakland at bay, find a way to win that game by 6 or 7 points. And again, you know, before the preseason began, I jumped on Tennessee at plus a point and a half. I still like him at -2.
That total in that ball game around 51, somewhere in there. Any other games on the slate opening week you like?
Boy, you're going to laugh at me at this one. I held my nose and I took the Jets. 8+8 over the Bills. Listen, this is going to be probably a few times this year where I jump on a team like the Jets, maybe never again after Sunday. But how can you not argue with getting 8 points, even though you got the worst team in the league? You got a football team seat that doesn't even know their quarterback's going to be. It looks like Tyrod Taylor will for the Buffalo Bills. They got a bunch of problems. They may not win more than 6 games, and they're laying 8 points. You know, that's just, to me, all about public perception, anti-Jets perception. And it's right. They're going to stink. But 8 points against a team that might win 6 games this year seemed like a lot to me. I'm on a few plays besides that. I also looked at, as I mentioned, the Tennessee Titans and going to lay the points there. I don't know if I'm going to get involved with the Seattle-Green Bay game as of yet, but if I do, it'll be on the Packers. I don't like Seattle's particular matchups against Green Bay. Seattle brings the heat. The one thing Aaron Rodgers does that no other opponent Seattle's probably going to face all year, he's so good at buying time with his feet, rolling right to the very edge of the field inbounds and firing that ball downfield when they can get behind defensive backs. And I'm saying this, saying I like Green Bay -3 seat, while also knowing that I've already given out Seattle on other shows to get to the Super Bowl and represent the NFC.
Right.
The Seahawks are my NFC choice this year to get to the Super Bowl, but I think they lose this game by more than 3 points.
Let's move on to the collegiate level, unless you have something else you want to drop on us.
That's about it. Other than the biggest handle by most of the books in town is going to be that Sunday night game between the Giants and the Cowboys. By far, that Sunday night game will end up being the biggest handle. Even though the Oakland Raiders are a big public favorite now in Vegas, it'll be the Giants and Cowboys marquee matchup on Sunday night.
Sharps are going where on that?
Right now, it's kind of split. I was talking to Matt Holt over at CGT earlier, and I love the term he uses, information triggers. When it comes to betting, he goes, there's been so many information triggers on why to bet the Giants, like with Zeke Elliott and his problems, and he's going to play now. And then, of course, Odell Beckham, who for the last couple of days has been called questionable, but he was on the practice field, by the way, today. That might mean he's going to play. So many information triggers that folks are betting on both sides right now rather equally.
Mm. Scott Spreitzer, Wager Talk here on the show. Game on. Okay, let's go college football here. Couple of good ones lined up. Oklahoma, Ohio State. Ohio State looking like about 7.5, 7.65. Anything you're looking at there?
Leading to Oklahoma. I haven't made the play yet. I might grab it at 7 or higher. I don't like the way Ohio State's corners looked against Indiana's receivers. I mean, my gosh, they were just firing the ball in the air, and those guys were going up and grabbing the football, the receivers, over the defensive backs' heads for 3 quarters last week against Ohio State. And something that worries me a little bit about JT Barrett, he goes 0 for 9 last week on passes longer than 15 yards for the Buckeyes. 0 for 9. He's the only major college quarterback that went 0 for with that many attempts last week when throwing the ball 15 yards or more. If you can't stretch the field against this Sooners team, you got some issues. Obviously, Oklahoma wants to get revenge for that ugly loss in Norman last year. I like the way Baker Mayfield looks. I think there's more question marks with JT Barrett. I think it's going to be a close game. So for me, right now it's not a play, but it is a lean on the Oklahoma Sooners.
Are you looking at Stanford, Southern Cal, anything there?
That 2-4-5 defense, what was that out of Southern Cal last week? You play a 2-45 against Stanford, they're going to run right through you. Western Michigan tore them up. You know, that game was a 49-31 USC final. They win by 18. It was 35-31 with like 4.5 minutes to go in the game. They came that close to losing outright to a team they were favored by 4 touchdowns against. And it was all based on this stupid-looking 2-45 defense where you basically have a couple of down linemen and all these gaps in between. You try that this week against Stanford. Coach Shaw, which is one of my favorites, is going to kick your butt. I like Stanford plus the points there.
The Rebels at Idaho.
Tony,
you know
Tony,
what?
Tony.
Let me see. Tony.
I'm not talking about the band.
No. If the Rebels lose this week, okay, and we know they're going to lose the following game against Ohio State, if they're 0-3, how bad is bad for Tony Sanchez and company?
They were supposed to win 5-6 games this year, right? That's all he said all summer long. That's what the bookmakers said, the win totals. They kept saying we're supposed to win 6 games this year. It's going to be our most improved year in the last decade or so. And then they come out and they're completely unprepared to take on Howard as a 45-point favorite. Listen, Cam Newton's little brother for Howard, that kid can play. There's no doubt about that. But they were blowing UNLV off the line of scrimmage. 300 yards rushing. Come on. If you throw 6 interceptions, fumble the ball 3 times, okay, Howard's in the game. But they blew him off the line. It wasn't even funny. It was so ugly. And so then, but here's the thing. It was funny because I was thinking, boy, this could be a dead team by week going into week 2. They could be dead for the season. So I'm at home and I'm watching, I think it was Fox 5 News or whatever, and they're interviewing a couple of the players. I'm not going to say his name, but you can figure it out when I say this. He was the senior captain for the team, or is the senior captain. And he says on TV, on the news broadcast, when asked about the loss, you know, that was the worst game we've played. And I'm paraphrasing. That was the worst game we've played in the entire time I've been at UNLV. And we only lost by 3 points. But we're not going to call it a moral victory. It ain't going to happen again. He's like, I'm like, he has no idea what this loss means. Yeah. He has no idea, and he's the senior captain, how stinking big this loss is. And he doesn't know, or at least he can't, I don't know, maybe be eloquent enough to describe how big of a loss he actually knows it is.
He's forgetting who the opponent is
that
they lost
like
to.
It's just young and dumb. Uh-huh. I hate to say that, but I'm referring to other things in life. And when you don't realize how bad something is, you might recover the next morning to be able to play again. Now, here's what's going to really shock you, because I said the Jets. I always make my numbers the week before the games are played. So before they played Howard, I made Idaho, my power ratings, 2.5 over UNLV. Because of what happened on Saturday, Idaho opened up like 8.5. I bet UNLV. They're right now down to 6.5.
Yeah.
I think they can recover and make this a game. And Tony Sanchez, boy, I don't know. You better win 4 games this year at least, and it better be nice. It better be close losses when you do lose. You can't lose. This is, you'll never get the stain off of your resume, off your coaching record, or any of that. And now you got an AD who I think cares about winning quite a bit.
Total 70.5 in this ball game. UNLV, of course, the atmosphere is awful up there. If you're an opponent going in there, you're playing inside this little
dome. Plus, they're ticked off.
Dome.
This is their last year in FBS. The school before last year decided, because of cost, they're going to move the program back down to FCS, and the fans are ticked off. And so they might, you know, there's a little extra motivation out of Idaho this year to do what they did last year, reach a bowl game again and show the administration you blew it. You blew it moving our program
down cool
to FCS.
Yep. The other thing about the Rebels is Bobby Houck, 2 years before he was fired, he went to a bowl game.
Yeah.
Then he went back down to normalcy for the Rebels. What was he, 2-12 or 3
and
whatever.
Or something, yeah.
So then they fire him. So Tony Sanchez comes in, and you know, there's this, okay, give it time. But if you lose back to back to Howard and then Idaho,
and you're going to get blasted next week.
Yeah, you got a big hill to climb. And it's no place to hide. I am rooting for them to win this game.
Oh, of course.
This is almost like a must-win game for the Rebel football program to just basically knock the headlines that are all negative from last week and everything else. Put it behind us. Let's move on.
If they win, it's over with. It's done. It's an embarrassment. But
if you lose,
it's in the rearview mirror. And this AD, like I said, I've never met her. I've heard her speak. She's
very bright,
mm-hmm. very intelligent, comes from good stock at Virginia Tech.
Right.
Seems to me, just in watching her speak, she wants to win. And Tony Sanchez, God bless him, but he's a holdover from TKM. You know, when he redid his contract in what, early portion of this year, that was, you know, under a different administration. It's going to be a little bit tricky if they lose to Idaho and they lose by a big margin.
What other games are you looking at here this week in college?
Oh, gosh, another schedule in front of me, trying to think off the top of my head what I'm looking at as far as college. I didn't play Oh, I know I got. I got Auburn. I took the six over Clemson. I think Auburn, with all those returning starters seat, are going to be too tough on the Clemson Tigers. If you remember last year, Auburn held them to 19 points, the national champions, to 19 points at a six-point loss. They played them better on defense than any other team Clemson faced, including Alabama. And that was with a very good quarterback who's now playing in the NFL. So I think Auburn's going to catch him. That number came down a little bit, but took six with the Auburn Tigers. That's one of my favorite plays on the weekend. And I'm still kind of like back and forth on whether I'm going to back BYU over Utah at home. That's virtual pick. BYU, it's around maybe plus one. BYU looked poor on offense against Portland State in week one. The offense did not look good against LSU. This is BYU, besides the fact that it's the rivalry with Utah, it's their Super Bowl to save their season, kind of. They can't afford to start 0-3. Doesn't mean they're going to win the game, but I like the extra motivation to not start 0-3. And Utah's down a little bit. Listen, they struggled last week for 2.5, 3 quarters against North Dakota. It's not a team in Utah that's going to challenge for the top of the Pac-12 this year. Just down a little bit.
Scott Spitzer, WagerTalk.com here on the show. Game on. You're on how many shows football season this year?
I just picked up another one today. Uh-oh. I got a phone call from ESPN, and they said, can you do Mike Golic Jr.'s show? He's got a new show. Can you do it with us? And thank God, don't tell anybody this. We're on air, right? Don't tell anybody this, but we're going to record it at about 11 o'clock tonight so they can play it back early morning on Friday. Thank God, because I'm working so many crazy hours. But we'll be talking about giving out like three plays a week with Mike Golic Jr. We still do the Mel Kiper show with Dari Noka on Saturdays, NFL Countdown on Sundays. We're basically all over ESPN. Every time you turn on the station, we're going to be doing something, it seems like, with ESPN National and then Mad Dog Radio on Wednesday nights. We are on with them. So,
congrats, man. Rolling through it. Football's here, baby,
crazy,
tonight.
Man. Is it April yet? Is it baseball season yet?
Have
the pitchers and catchers reported yet?
And we'll get back to the pennant. Every Thursday you hear Scott Spitzer in here, 3 o'clock straight up. Always my pleasure, my friend.
Good stuff.
You can be heard on social. Found on social media.
I'm trying to give you a knuckle bash here. If folks could see us, we look like the Three Stooges now.
That was hilarious.
Ari's over there with his phone recording it, ready to put it on social media. But anyway, Scott Wins on Twitter, by the way, at Scott Wins and at WagerTalk.com.
Always a pleasure, brother. Good work.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Scott Spitzer, real knuckle bash. There you go. All right. We'll step away. Lighters up. Dope is next.
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
Look like a quarter pounder, man. Led Zeppelin.
Man, be careful with that, man.
Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for Man, That Show is Dope.
3:38 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. All right, let me ask you this. You like tennis?
Yeah.
Okay with it?
Cool.
You like pretty chicks?
Of course.
You like Americans?
Sure.
Well, then you'll like this. The U.S. Open, all USA women's final in the quarterfinals. Yes! Ladies. We like this. Now, Coco Vandeweghe, she takes on Madison Keys. And also, you've got Venus Williams taking on Solon Stevens. All-American women's semifinals in the U.S. Open. You can't make it any better. You got to go way back to 1981, the last time you had this happen. And as far as Grand Slam, you had 1985, the last time the field was All-American females. So if you like your women as Americans and you like them hot, and you like them athletic, then you like dope.
Hey, then I like dope. Minus the grunts, of course. Not a big fan. All right. I have a story about Lionel Messi. I say that right. A young fan ran up on him when he was getting off in the Argentina soccer's team bus in Uruguay on Wednesday. And they dragged him out like security. It's a kid. You know, they did their job, but... But Messi stopped everything, ordered them to, you know, just relax, got the kid over there, got him for like a little meet and greet, and like made the kid's life, let alone day. So, and then, you know, there's a lot of negative things about this guy. Like, he's a tax cheat. So it's just good to see something good.
Wait a minute.
That he's in the news for a good thing. So
What do you mean he's a tax cheat?
That's what it said in the,
It doesn't affect our economy. He's over there.
Sure. I guess the dope part is that he is in the news for a good thing, and that good thing is with his fan, and to me that is dope.
That's dope. Okay, he can do what he wants with his money.
Right.
Let him be. This one pretty cool. Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, the Super Bowl defending champion Pats, getting it on tonight against KC in the opener. Well, they busted that guy, that Mauricio dude who ended up stealing Tom Brady's jersey. Remember, this guy has stolen the jersey before. He took a helmet before, too. Well, the guy who ended up ratting this thief out that stole the jersey, Robert Kraft, gave him front row seats to all the New England Patriot home games this year. The guy's name is Dylan Wagner. So they got Dylan taking shots along with some jersey. They gave him a nice gift pack. Robert Kraft with the kid, taking care of the guy who took care of the rat. Robert Kraft, I always liked him. I remember interviewing him at that Charger game a couple of years ago when he had that 25-year-old blonde on his left arm. He knows how to live, and he knows how to give. Robert Kraft, dope.
You are dope. Those are some expensive seats, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Whew. Free stuff, man.
Man, must be nice. Next one I have, Cleveland police respond to a Taco Bell. Basically, an armed robber went in there, tried to shoot the place up. And police actually responded because that man is now dead. And the two employees, 19 and 23, I guess were packing. And it was not going down that night. Yeah, I mean, the dope part isn't that the guy died, unfortunately. But the dope part to me is, look, you know, these guys are working hard. It's not a glamorous job. They probably don't get paid very well. You should not be putting your life in danger at a Taco Bell.
Wait.
So for those two gentlemen for packing heat at the Taco Bell job, that show is dope in Cleveland.
Is this right here a requirement at a Cleveland Taco Bell? After hours, you got to be strapped.
Right. I will say, yeah, it is. It was shortly before 3 a.m. So, I mean, it's definitely.
I mean, what are these two employees going to be doing when the job's over, huh? They're going out to rob somebody else?
And they're strapped in packing iron.
That is a good question.
Why are you strapped at a Taco Bell and you're an employee in there?
We're planning somebody to come in here and try to rob us. We're going to stitch him up
just in case, yeah.
Or tonight when we get out of here, we're going to do some meth and we're going to go rob some people ourselves.
There you go.
So they stitched him up and they got away with it?
Yeah, in the statement, Taco Bell said the company was offering counseling to the restaurant workers and was cooperating with the investigation.
Counseling. Give me some free drugs. We'll be fine. We don't have to go rob anybody else.
Tacos.
Nah, you know, it's unfortunate the dude is dead, but hey, man, if you go into a place looking to take something and you're putting other people's lives in jeopardy or you're making them uncomfortable at their jobs and they happen to be armed, you end up where you belong.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right, this one, sticking with sports, and it's Tim Tebow. His career is over for this year. Or I should say his season is over with the minor league organization with the Mets. He overall batted about 2.25. He had 8 home runs and about 485 at-bats. 45 RBIs. And I'm happy for him that he completed the season. He's going now into broadcasting for the SEC in football. And I'm thinking, what is his upside? Okay, he's not a power hitter. He cut down on his strikeouts when they did promote him. So if you're going to keep him in the organization, what are you keeping him in there for other than his popularity? Because if he's someone else, he ain't coming back next year. But they haven't assigned him yet to next year, so he says he wants to come back, but I give him credit. He stuck in there. He didn't quit. He made it through the entire year, and that's a lot of change in your life when you're going from a small town to a small town on bus. You're eating meals in a different way. Everything is so underclass compared to what you had in football and what you had in college and with the pros in football that you have to really want this to complete it. Tim Tebow completed it. Whether he comes back or not, I give him credit. I think he displayed that he's pretty dope.
Yeah, that's good. Very humble, too. I agree, going from almost the top of your own game, respectively, to come in as a newcomer in any circumstance.
That's
pretty dope. All right, this is dope and not so dope. I am not a big LeVar Ball fan.
You love him. You told me you love him.
It's like a love-hate thing now. His hustle is just insane. He's really obnoxious to me. Like a lot of the things he says. But, you know, he banks on these things. He banks on his obnoxiousness. So, one more power move. Once again, a month after announcing the Lakers rookie, Lonzo Ball will be wearing his own signature Big Baller brand shoes in the game. NBA 2K revealed that Lonzo's outspoken father, LeVar Ball, will also be included. It's in the career mode, I think it's called. You can have the option to have him on there. It shows he's got messages and all. It's all kinds of funny things. I'm just gonna leave it at that. But just look for him in 2K18, coming soon.
Yeah, stay in your lane, LeVar.
Yeah,
stay in your lane.
Getting
buddy.
Money. That's pretty dope.
Hey, the thing is, he's a celebrity now, and he's gonna be making money just like his boy is. I give him credit. You know, I'm not agreeable with what he did with the AAU, quitting on his team because of the technical, getting the referee, the female referee, run from a game because of the technical.
That was awful.
That's crossing the line. However, I think the way he got his family and his son in on the front page, and his kid had to have the talent to become a Laker and a number two overall lottery pick, but he had to be the guy to help provide them for what they needed to bring them up. He did a good job at that. So in the end, him moving his career up, good for him. It's dope.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to step away. Lighters down. When we get back, we'll jump back into some of the things that happened in the world of sports earlier. Next here, Game On.
Now back to Game On, Seat Williams.
Final go-round brought to you by Reliable Banner at ReliableBanner.com. Game on, folks, for another 5 minutes or so. Let's go to Kaepernick and Ray Lewis. Now, you recall when the Baltimore Ravens recently brought Kaepernick into camp, took a look at him. Then they got in touch with Ray Lewis. Now, Ray Lewis said that the team got in touch with him because they were going to consult him to see, hey, what do you think of Kaepernick? What do you think of Cap? Should we bring him in? Before Kaepernick's girlfriend tweeted out that it was a racial setup of, I don't know, Samuel L. Jackson in the movie and the slave owner and the master. Here's what Ray Lewis had to say about why Cap didn't get called back by Baltimore.
I can disagree with how he did it. That should be perfectly fine. But then his girl goes out and puts out this racist gesture and doesn't know.
To be clear, whose girl, whose lady?
Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't know we're in the back office about to try to get this guy to sign. Steve Bisciotti said himself, how can you crucify Ray Lewis when Ray Lewis is the one calling for Colin Kaepernick? I'm on the phone with this guy. So to your point, that's what I'm talking about, the fraternity of our league. Judy, I have fought for kids who's done bad things and been looked at the wrong way. But I don't talk to the people who can't get things done. I go to the decision makers. And the decision makers in this one were Steve Bisciotti and Ozzie Newsome. And the only thing that went bad, was that image where she tried to make us a racist in the individuals. And that's the sad part about this story.
That's Ray Lewis right there. I think it was I can't remember if it was a blog on a show, whatever the case may be, but that's him saying exactly what happened. In his opinion, why Cap didn't get the call back. He was brought in as a consultant to see if Cap was the guy to back up Flacco, who's got the bad back. When you got a bad back and you're a quarterback, we saw what happened with a bad neck, right, in Peyton Manning and the four operations. Credit that dude. That old dude played two more years and got a ring and then rode off into the sunset doing commercials, hosting the ESPYs and you name it, on and on, and he's doing well. Well, we'll see what happens with Flacco here. How much time does he have left? Because he has a cannon for an arm. But when your back is jacked up, you land on that thing one or two times, you ain't playing much football anymore. So, believable? Do you believe that's the way it went down? Ray Lewis, take your phone calls. We got a minute, 702-365-9200, 702-365-9200. Do you believe, Ray Lewis, that the owner, they were calling him in to consult him to see if, in fact, Kaepernick would be a good backup to Joe Flacco? it's pretty believable. I'm not going to doubt that it happened or something of that nature happened, but guess what? You had the guy there. Why were you messing around? If you needed a backup, he's better than the guy you got in there now, okay? I mean, look, it's a situation where you have to make the call on who's better for your organization, right? You want Ryan Mallard as your quarterback now, or you want Colin Kaepernick? Well, Mallard's your guy now. So we'll see how that turns out in the future. Nevertheless, what can you do? I give Ray Lewis credit for speaking up, but Kaepernick, unlike Michael Bennett, Kaepernick's the one who started the movement, and Michael Bennett now has the torch. He's moving on. I don't know if Kaepernick's going to be on a team this year. Has Eric Williams of ESPN.com, will Cap play on a team this year? He said no. And maybe he knew what he was talking about when he said that. Did it to yourself, dog. All right. Thanks to our special guest, Scott Spritzer, WagerTalk.com. Check me on Facebook. I'll be out somewhere doing a little fun. And also, we have a podcast, LVSportsNetwork.com. You want to hear anything you missed on the shows, we'll be doing that. For Scott Spritzer, for Ari, I'm Seed Williams. Remember, folks, keep your chins tucked low, guards up high. We'll see you on the radio for more. That's tomorrow on NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game. Game on.